This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Now back to Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com. Twist in there, twist in the night. Let's twist the line. Lean
up. Lean back. Welcome back. Hollywood Casino Press Box on the all-new 590 The Fan. Marquette's finest, Martin Kilcoyne, who I predicted today in a CBC JV jersey right now, could outshoot the Billikens last night. You would make 8 out of 20 from 3. You'd be unguarded. You'd be loose. You'd be knocking them down. What do you think?
I heard that, and I actually swerved into traffic. I was most times I'm listening, you guys are mocking me.
Well, that was
spelling.
One time.
I think, Frank, I got to tell you, I'd take the under. I think 8 out of 20.
If you're loose, not guarded.
I haven't shot a lot lately. I think I'm more in that 6-7 range, to be honest with you.
Still three times as much as the Billikens.
Yeah. No, I was flattered. I really was. And then you guys started making fun of my spelling, so it evened out. Something nice was said, and it is Rick Kornfeld with a C, not related to Gary Kornfeld. And he was partners with the, remember the young gentlemen that were here, the lawyers, the Brunings?
Oh, yeah.
So they all worked together on this. But what I was told, I have not talked to this attorney, he made a call to the Rams early on in some of the initial requests for, you know, documentation, whatever. And there was a woman on the phone that was laughing while he was asking. He said, well, we're working on this lawsuit. And she said something to the effect, yeah, good luck with that. So I think there's further satisfaction from those who filed the suit. This is on behalf of the PSL owners. This is not related to the city, county, NFL
yes.
lawsuit.
Now, the number on the PSL lawsuit that Stan will have to be paying
is $24 million. And one of the things that's really important is he's on the hook for $24 million. That's what the judge, the courts have decided. That's the agreement. But if people just don't go through the process, don't fill out the paperwork, then Stan pays less. So
boy, fill out the paperwork,
absolutely.
People.
How could you not be motivated to do that?
Now, we're going to find out a little bit later what the range is on if Stan violated the relocation laws, but he's actually now on the hook for paying the NFL fees too?
Well, this is interesting because Jason Cole, we're going to have him in the noon hour today. He's covered the NFL for a long time. I think mostly Yahoo is where you know that name, but he's always covered sort of the business of the NFL, not Darren Revelle and merchandise, but more of the inner workings, ownership, moving teams. He was at all those meetings we would go to, but his report the other day said that there was a document put in front of the Chargers, Raiders, and Rams in Houston 3 years ago before they had the vote for Los Angeles. And they were told, this is his report, that all three teams were told, if you don't sign this paper, we will not consider your bid for relocation. And the paper essentially said, the legal document, you will be in charge of all expenses, legal expenses, moving forward in terms of lawsuits, et cetera, the league will not be in the middle of any of that. So apparently they signed it, and one of the quotes that Jason Cole had was that he had been told by multiple sources that Kroenke was getting increasingly agitated by the growing expense of litigation with St. Louis.
This is good.
Okay,
like
so Kroenke is not picking it up for the Chargers and Raiders.
No, he's in charge of his own, and apparently they all agreed, hey, the league said, if you want to do this, you're probably getting sued. You better be ready for it. And each team said, sure. I don't think San Diego has, as a city or county or anything, has done any kind of legal suit. We know Oakland right now is in the middle of the suit.
Can Mark Davis afford this?
That's a good question because he doesn't
really
have money.
He's driving a van, isn't he?
Eating at P.F. Chang's?
I bet he doesn't have rear windows.
Right, yeah.
Oh, the rear camera.
Yeah. I mean, because Kroenke's worth billions upon billions. I know that's a thorn in his side, but he can write the check. I know the Davis family fortune has always been kind of
nebulous.
In doubt. Yeah, and like, you know, how much is it? Is it all on the team? Is there some sort of other revenue stream?
That was sort of Georgia's problem, was her money was the team. I mean, the team had value and had money and made money every year, but she didn't have some business on the side or have a huge bank account like a Jerry Jones that he brought to the table. So, yeah, Mark Davis, who, by the way, was really, he kind of brought the lighter moments to all of those meetings we would go to.
Oh, yeah.
He was kind of a boob.
Unfiltered.
But he was great fun because all these old rich guys in suits would walk by, no comment, nothing to say here. And then you look in the middle of the hotel lobby, and Mark Davis is holding court, and you could almost read the minds of the owners walking by, like, oh, my God, will somebody tell Spalding to shut up?
The idiot again.
Yeah.
Talking to the media.
Like, you look at the Clark Hunts and the Michael Bidwells. I mean, if they weren't born into that family, would they be working at FedEx now? I mean,
right.
Now, nothing to matter with FedEx. They pay well.
Right. So. Now, those two might be sharper. I mean, they're definitely sharper, I would guess, than a Mark Davis, but a lot of them did just stumble in to the family business. And you could kind of pick up on it. The more of those meetings you went to, which, by the way, in Houston, everybody had their cameras and their train. Like, where? Frank comes out in a nice suit at one point, and the media, remember this,
oh,
it's
this
like a
is
second
funny.
Floor.
Yeah.
We're all on the other side of, like, velvet
this
robes.
Is great.
And Frank gets off this elevator, and everybody from Oakland to San Diego, everybody's got cameras over there. They all start zooming in, and I hear him go, right there. Who's that guy right there? And I might have said, I think it's Biscotti, the Ravens guy. Because they were just looking for any video of any owner walking by, and you were out there on the wrong side. Yeah. You were on the owner's side of the road.
I had a Cavado suit on that day.
You could have snuck into the meeting.
That was so great.
You could have been
and
a fly in the wall.
Camera, and I just egged him on. I'm like, hold on, I think he's going to the relocation meeting there?
There have never been that many cameras on me since I was passing the ball to Stepanovich in the background.
The only thing I had similar to that in San Francisco, one of those NFL owner meetings, I got on an elevator, and this guy gets on, and I think we're the only two on there, as I recall. He said, well, that was productive, don't you think? That was a good meeting. And I said, yeah, it was great, or whatever. And I look, and it was Stephen Ross, the Dolphins owner. And if I'd been thinking quicker,
I was zoned out. What was discussed in regards to
I
that?
Should have said, like, how about that Kroenke? Do you really think he's going to get away with this? I should have initiated further dialogue, but I'm pretty sure after he said it, he kind of looked over and was like, oh, this guy's wearing sweatpants. Okay.
Well, I remember at the one in Dallas when they actually got the team a long time ago, we were there for a week. I mean, I go to spring training for 48 hours now. We were there for an entire, like, week. And I somehow was always, like, saw Pat Bowlen around. And he was a very nice fella. Everybody loved Pat Bowlen. And he would always, when we'd be walking, it's not like we had a meeting or anything, but he'd always, so we developed some kind of like rapport a little bit. So the day that the decision was being made, you know, we're all scrambling. We know they're in this meeting. And so Bowlen goes out the back door. And so I run out the back door and I said, Pat, can you please tell me, well, we're not allowed to say what happened. I go, would I be incorrect in saying that the Rams got St. Louis got the Rams? He says, no, you wouldn't. And so we ran a satellite truck on him for, you know, like 5 seconds, 40 miles. So it didn't mean anything. But I always remember Pat Bowlen for being kind and generous.
Frank sent him some cheese bread in the mail. I did enjoy those meetings because it was we cover sports for a living. You go in the locker room and there's clearly like a end result. This was sort of nebulous and you would chase guys that we joked with David Hunn from the Post-Dispatch about it. And I said, isn't this weird for you? You're not even a sports guy. And he pulls out this folder, and he had headshots. It was really smart on his part. And he'd say, well, that's Mara right there. That's the kid. His brother is the one who runs the – and he actually had, like, basically a scorecard program for all the NFL owners. It was a brilliant move. My best moment would have been in Chicago. It would have been late summer 2015. I think we all have the same footage of Smithers and Enos walking together. They kept going around this one corner, and you get footage of the two walking together. But we were staked out, and we were trying to decide. There's like three doors. You're like, where do you go? So we said, we're here with everybody. Let's just go around the back. And we run around the back. We didn't see anybody for a while. I said, oh, my God. And I'm assuming you were there. But I was like, God, if Frank is getting – what if Enos talks or Smithers?
Oh, yeah, likely.
Probably not. And I said, but we're also going to miss him coming out of the meeting. And the photographer, Kevin Marshall, said, how many shots do you need of the same guy walking up and down the hallway? Because I'm like, we can't miss the shot. He said, at some point, that shot's worthless. Okay. So he kind of convinced me. And we went into the back parking lot, and this guy comes out with all these people. It was Jerry Jones. And we just kind of bum-rushed him. And I said, we're from St. Louis. What can you tell us?
Swarmed him.
And we swarmed him. We did. And he stopped and he said, I love St. Louis. When I was in Springfield, Missouri, I'd come to the football Cardinal games. I love watching those teams play, and I would come up. I'm very fond of St. Louis.
Jerk.
It's maybe a week later, I was in Oxnard, California, when they did that little trip to the L.A. area for training camp. And all the L.A. cameras are swarming Jerry. This is like a week later, and we were there. And he's like, well, let me tell you, folks, I'm from Inglewood, California originally, and I love Los Angeles. I'm like, it was the exact thing he had said to us.
Oh, my God.
He was claiming all of these hometowns.
Wow.
Jerry, your thoughts on Helena, Montana. I'll tell you what.
I've always been a big fan. It was literally a week later. I'm like, these guys are such frauds.
How about the time in Houston when we lost him? And I think I've mentioned this before, but for some reason, Demoff made himself available, and he was bum-rushed by you, me, Randy Carricker, just surrounded. I think Mo may have been there too. And it was almost as close as we've ever come
physical
to beating up an executive.
Yes.
I mean, and he felt it too. I mean, somebody was going to take a swing at
him. Just start whacking him with their microphones.
Yeah. Now, we joke, and Hoff has the clip, where the female reporter for ESPN, after that Cody Parkey missed kick in Chicago, she was on the air and she said, and we swarmed him. And it sounded silly. This example, Demoff in Houston, we
and
did kind of swarm him.
We swarmed him.
Oh, my gosh.
And what happened was we got him on the TV side. We all got some questions. And remember, then he's, I got to go. And he'd said everything he could say. And then Carricker came around. I think he got there late. And Demoff's like, I got to go. And Randy was, like, screaming at him, you owe us answers. He was, like, following him. And I think they went around the corner and then actually conducted an interview.
Good for Randy, who, by the way, was at Kimmel's last night. We have a week left on the location. We're going to close down there January 31st, next Thursday, last day.
I got to get in there.
Yeah.
Who's at the window? Is DJ at the window? I could usually tell who Frank had done a story with recently if they were at the window. I think all-time window seating. Is Demetrius Johnson on the top 10?
Well, he is actually a good customer because he has that company where he sells training equipment, you know, to college and pro teams all over. So he's brought some good customers.
Who do you think, outside of family, who do you think you've seen at Kimmel's the most over the years? Like
Gus Terragrossa.
Okay.
No, I'll come up with a more factual answer shortly.
I'm trying to think over the years.
I think we have our new guest.
All right, the Hall of Famer. And the initial shock that I had.
Okay, yes. Yeah,
didn't you think Earl was already in the Billiken Hall of Fame?
Well, it's an injustice that has been righted. He joins us now. Earl, congratulations. How are you today?
I'm fine. Thank you very much.
Tell us about how you actually got the news, where you were, who told you.
Well, I was just sitting in my chair here at home, relaxing, and Chris May, the athletic director, called me. I'm not sure what it was about, and he informed me, and I was like, oh, wow. Well, a little surprised, but appreciative of the honor. But, yeah, that's how I got. I was just chilling out.
When it was Chris May, you thought he was going through some of your travel receipts. You're like, Earl, you're a little over budget here.
You never know.
How did your Billiken, I mean, it's 28 years now on the call. You've seen a lot there with SLU. You're a passionate ambassador of the program. How did it start? How did you end up? I know you're a basketball guy, but how did you end up in the booth?
Well, back in 1990-91 season, I guess it was Coach Grauer's final season, and it was the games were on KESP back then. Rich Gray kind of ran the sports station, and I was part of the pre-game and post-game show at that time. I guess the games were still at the Keele Auditorium, and there was a little room and the queue. We did the post game show, and I was part of that. And that's kind of how it all started. And it kind of mushroomed from there.
That's right, because Malcolm was the analyst before you, and then you took it from. Well, you didn't take it, but they gave it to you from Malcolm. I remember that.
Well, Malcolm went joined the Rams team when the Rams came to town. He became their sideline reporter throughout the Rams network. So then that's when I slid in full time as the color analyst with Rammer.
So you are in the Lindenwood Hall of Fame, the St. Louis, is that right? Or they retired your jersey. Yeah. I know that. What Hall of Fames are you in? We're trying to keep proper tabs.
Okay. Lindenwood University, where I went to high school, I mean college. McClure North High School, where I went to high school. Missouri Basketball Coaches Association Hall of Fame. St. Louis Sports Hall of Fame. And then I have one of those on Page Avenue, a mural of myself was with a bunch of other St. Louisans. If you drive along Page, I have one, a picture mural on there, and then this one, the St. Louis U.
And when is this one? What's going to happen? How you go in?
I believe it'll be Saturday on the, I guess, the 16th. We play LaSalle at 4 o'clock, and I believe they have like a luncheon type ceremony the day of the game. So that's pretty cool. Kind of get you ready for a big game that day.
Frank will probably buy a table. Just let him know who he needs to call.
Yeah. How far into the speech do you mention Martin and Frank, by the way?
Oh, at the beginning. Did you really do a TKO about this last
week? Yes. Because my nightly commentary is almost always sarcastic. We're always mocking people. My plan was to do something on the Chiefs hiring Spagnuolo, how these guys just get hired over and over, and it doesn't matter what you know, it's who you know. And I thought, oh, that's just kind of old news. Let's do something fun. So we did a little commentary on Earl, and I pointed out what Frank said in the monologue. There's nobody that dislikes Earl. Like, there's people that like Frank. There's people that don't. There's people that don't like me. I get it. Everybody likes Earl.
Really?
Frank.
But that's the good news, Earl, that Martin did that. The bad news is you're not going to be compensated this month because that kind of counts as your
pay. It's payola there.
That's right.
In lieu of pay. Yeah.
When is the last time you just unloaded on somebody? A parking attendant, a waiter, an official?
At the game? Or
yeah, and last time you got mad?
Probably a couple of months ago at a playoff football game, a bunch of coaches from one team tried to fight my brother-in-law after the game for no real good reason. I wasn't very happy about that.
I might recall that.
Yes, I think it got a little publicity.
Yeah, and it was bogus, and I wasn't happy about that, and still not happy about that. So we'll leave it at that.
All right, let me get a quick couple of Billiken thoughts. Last night, 2 of 20 from three. I mentioned earlier, Earl, it has to be the first game in the history of grade school, high school, college, and NBA basketball that a team out-rebounded another by 25 and lost.
Yeah, I think, it was 54-30 rebounding, but 2 of 20 from 3 and 23 turnovers, which they turned into 25 points to kind of cancel it out. It was just the stats were just so volatile one way. They're so extreme. But then we were 19 of 22 from the free throw line as well, which is like for our team, for any team, that's really good. But for our team, it's just truly remarkable. So, you say, Travis said on the postgame show, you turn it over 23 times and you shoot 2 of 20 from 3. You probably should have lost by 20, but we lost by 4 because we dominated the boards and we made our free throws. But the turnovers really, really killed us because we just gave away. And they started turning them into points. And, like a team like us doesn't give up. We don't give up 77 points. We got to give up somewhere in the 60s, high 50s. But if we're turning it over and they're getting in transition, and Duquesne's a team that can put the ball in the basket, that's when it turns into a 77-73 game. And that's not a game we want to play in. And obviously, we got to make shots. We did a great job against St. Joe's. I mean, we had 11 the game before, and we just got to make the open ones. Like I said, we won't be mistaken for Golden State or Houston or somebody like that, but we got some guys that are capable of making wide-open shots. And if you're going to win a championship, especially win some road games, you got to make those open ones, especially the way we attack the glass and attack the rim.
Earl, 5-6 years ago when SLU was on the great run, kind of dominating the A-10 almost, they seem to be clearly a better team, maybe other than VCU. There was a division, the top two or three teams, and then the rest of the pack. I feel like this year it's really close in terms of who's better. Like, I don't see any team running away or dominating, which means you got to be careful here because everybody seems kind of beatable on any given night, whereas in the past we've had some kind of dominant teams.
Oh, yeah, like last year Rhode Island kind of ran away from everybody. St. Bonaventure got hot late. And Davidson won the tournament. That's how we got three teams in. This year, it's just going to be a battle royal. There's about 6 or 7 of us, and you see it at the top. There's 5 of us, think, with one loss. Like, say, us and Davidson played Saturday. George Mason is 6-1 right now with 4 road wins already in league play. And then Dayton is good. Rhode Island is good. VCU is good. All of us are just going to be, Rhode Island, like, it's just going to be not in Duquesne, you know, 5-1. They're all going to be just going to be knocking each other around. It's going to be like a Ferris wheel that division from week to week.
Do you think it's a realistic possibility? It's a two-team bid for the NCAA tournament because it's been three, I think, the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, it's going to be hard because we didn't really perform well in the non-conference. We had some great opportunities. We had some wins, but we were so close to having other good wins, and you can add us to that with Pitt and at Houston. Those would have been real good conference wins, which we kind of fell short, although we did have Seton Hall, Oregon State, and Butler. And that was kind of the league. There was just so many near misses. And then the volatility of never not one dominant team, I think it's everybody just going to, you know, beat up on each other. So it's going to be hard. You know, hopefully we can get a second team in, maybe a third. But unless somebody just emerges and runs away and has a dominant season, then somebody else wins the conference tournament. That's usually how you get a lot of, you know, multiple bids. But this is a different year for the A-10. This is a year where parity really could kind of be our undoing in terms of getting multiple bids. We'll see.
Now, we all overall, I would never complain, but I believe before that road trip to Philly and New York, I had a great idea. I love the Earl Time updates. I thought we could take it out and maybe do a little food picks like Frank would enjoy from Philly, New York.
Yes.
Now, Rammer has told us that Earl holds up in his room and he doesn't leave, but these Earl Time updates have exploded. I mean, I walked in my kitchen the other day and Earl was doing an Earl Time update. He's everywhere, but we haven't taken it out on the road with the food picks. Any chance it'll still get done?
Oh, on the road food?
Yeah, I thought that would be great. Go to the streets of Philly, streets of Earl Time update.
Yeah,
the food edition.
From Annie Brothers in Pittsburgh, Philly cheesesteak. You go to some great food cities.
Local food is Frank's territory.
If he can drag me out, I definitely will do something. We've in the past, we've hit some of those restaurants, and if I can get out. I'm out so much on the road while I'm home that a lot of times when I actually go on the road on these trips for 2 or 3 days, that's my time to rest. And I just lay in the bed or just work and just chill out. And that's my time to just get some rest. But I know when I get back home, it's almost nonstop again daily.
He's got a Monday Mid-States hockey. He might be at a wrestling. You're right. Okay, you deserve to rest on the road. I was being a little selfish. Just wanted to take it to the next level with food. That's all.
Yeah. Well, if we hit a restaurant, a good one, we'll definitely get one from there.
Good stuff. Earl, congratulations. You're a Hall of Famer. It was confirmed yesterday what we've known for years. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you very much, guys. You take it easy.
All right. Earl Austin Jr. joining us.
I'm glad he had an answer, too. And the last time you were mad, I think we're talking about MICDS Ladue football playoff game. Parkway North, yeah. MICDS.
Yep.
Was
that the famous game where Strickland...
Was Strick watching through the fence?
Maybe? Yes, I believe so. Is he going to be appearing through like a gym window or something like that?
It saves $5.
He'll be at the Hall of Fame luncheon outside Chaffetz.
Yeah.
Oh, poor Strick.
Along those lines, by the way, we did get a text there, Denver Bronco related. Brian, why don't you read that?
Mr. Bolin was the best there is. Plenty of room for you on the Broncos bandwagon, especially since it's looking more and more like Drew Locke will be a Bronco in 2019.
Well, I heard Frank say that's where the money's going to go, towards a jersey.
And everybody is a diehard Broncos fan now. What happens when Elway and the boys pass up on Drew Locke? Criticize them and say, how could you?
Then they don't know a good QB.
Somebody did email me last night because I'd mentioned it on television I was going to buy a Drew Locke jersey too. And they said, what if Drew Locke is drafted by the Rams? That'd be bad on a lot of costs.
They don't need him, but
no. Tom Brady's heir apparent. You're going to get yourself a nice navy.
Well, I wouldn't mind buying a Patriot one. I would never buy a Rams.
Was Elway the highest ranking NFL front office exec to attend a Mizzou game this year?
That we know of.
Okay. Oh,
I would
to
say.
Be, yeah.
It just seems like that's you're going to see a guy to make sure you want to pick him.
Did you hear the other night, by the way, 11 scouts were in the Billiken game to see Javon Best, 11 NBA scouts. And, you know, as great as Javon is, he may end up being the Atlantic 10 Player of the Year. I wonder if he has the explosive quality to be an NBA two guard. I don't know. He does a lot of things well, but I didn't think, like, surefire NBA.
Maybe like a late second-round pick,
yeah.
And then he gets on a team and they just love him, and he's a glue guy and can kind of stick
right.
in the league.
How about, like, Damari Carroll's career? How much money he's made?
Oh, he has two career earnings, Damari Carroll.
I mean, what does he make in this year?
Yeah.
$6-7 million
He's played for New Jersey. I saw him play against the Wizards.
He's averaging 11 a game for Brooklyn. Not bad.
How about career earnings?
All right, guess.
$80 million
Oh, boy. That feels high.
I go 60. I think 60 range.
I have no idea. But we're talking about, what, 10 years in the league at this point?
He's been in the league since 2009-10
So it's a couple of million
started
a year early on. And then it goes up a little. So the average is probably, I'll go 45.
Right now it's at 50. He'll be at 65 at the end of this year. He's making $15 million this season. Then he's a free agent.
God, he could end up at 80.
He signed a 4-year, $60 million contract in 2015.
Wow. Maybe Kyler Murray should play basketball. I mean,
wouldn't that be great?
Who was the example? Eric Dampier was always an example we would bring up in the NBA because nobody even knew he was in the NBA and he was making like 13 a year.
Who was the Orlando Magic player? There was one guy with the Magic who signed like
Rashard Lewis.
Yes.
Oh, that
and that one never made sense.
But you have Otto Porter at 25 or 24 million
Mike
a year.
Mike Conley at one point had the biggest contract.
Now he's a really good player.
Yeah, but like he's not.
Legacy. No, that's like a legacy, I think, contract for the Grizzlies.
They're trying to move him now.
But, but when you're averaging, you know, you're like 12-5 what Porter is, and you're making in the 20s. Gosh, Aaron Rodgers, like maybe the greatest quarterback ever. What did he make before this last contract? Like 10?
I think 10 or 15 he was at. And a guy who I thought was going to be a complete bust for the contract, Tim Hardaway Jr., actually had put up stats. I think he signed a ridiculously huge contract.
There was a time where Tim Hardaway was the best in the league.
Tristan Thompson's making $17 million, putting up 11 a game.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's why, you know, on Jeremiah Tillman, I know it's fruitless to talk about the guy after what he did last night. I always thought Tillman has a little bit of Tristan Thompson in him. You know, could be a shot blocker, a pretty good defender, has a little bit of skill. I mean, why couldn't he be Tristan Thompson? But he's got to stay in games. So, how about this one from Handy Randy, my favorite text? T.J. McConnell was in charge of guarding James Harden a few nights ago. Would love to see Bess in that situation. Would do well. Yeah, good point.
I mean, there are a lot of scorers in the league. It wouldn't hurt to have a guy who could play defense.
Exactly. Especially a great kid, too. All right. We're going to talk a little bit about how much Stank could actually lose. I'm excited about that. But before we go to break, I do want to tell you about our good friend, Dr. Michael Jones. If you'd like to get rid of the contacts and the glasses forever, it's real simple. You call Dr. Michael Jones, and he will get it done for you. He's one of the great eye surgeons in the country. He's with Quantum Vision Centers, 866-260-EYES. He practices on both sides of the river, but I would just pick up the phone, 866-260-EYES, say I'd like to see Dr. Jones about getting the LASIK surgery so I don't have to wear glasses or contacts again. We'll be right back.